Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
BFM 89.9, you're now listening to Ringgit and Cents, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Roshan Kanisan. Now, during the MCO and in the larger scheme of the pandemic that we're facing, job security and income security has become a hot topic. And a lot of employees aren't sure of their rights and what employers can do when it comes to their salaries. So to help me clear this up, I'm speaking to Mohan Ramakrishnan, Labour and Industrial Relations Lawyer, to give us a legal perspective on what employers can do and what employees can do and their rights. Mohan, thank you so much for joining me on the line today.
Thank you, Roshan. Thank you for having me.
So Mohan, let's just get into the framework. How do employment arrangements work here?
Roshan, generally in Malaysia, we have a few types of employment, right? There's the permanent employment, fixed-term contracts, fixed-term employment, you call them, part-time employment, and you have the daily wage earners. Now, as far as the daily wage earners are concerned, you know, provided there is continuity in the employment, you consider them daily wage earners. These are basically employees who work in markets, restaurants, probably even factories, where they are paid on a daily basis. And when I say daily basis, you know, as long as these people work almost every day, the contract is the same, their wages are the same. These are daily wage earners, and these are recognized as a head of employment in Malaysia.
And what about the differences between permanent employment and fixed-term contracts? How does that differ?
Okay, permanent employment is basically where there is no duration. You are employed to a particular position, and that position is yours. You are not under probation, and you are not under a trial or whatever. Okay, there is no time limit. There is no tenure to this. You are considered a permanent employee. Whereas fixed-term contracts are where you are employed for a duration of time. For instance, you know, you're given a 2-year contract of employment, 1-year contract of employment, or 3 years contract of employment. That's fixed-term contracts.
And in terms of security, I presume permanent employment is more secure?
Yes, that's right.
So when it comes to agreement between employers and employees, what constitutes a legally binding agreement between the two?
Basically, you know, agreements can be oral, they could be written, and as you know, these agreements will have terms that are stated in there, and as long as one party agrees to employ the other, the other agrees to serve him as his employee, then there is a binding contract. Now, you will know that generally contracts of employment will carry certain terms. These are all definitive terms like the job title, job scope, status of employment, whether the person is a probationer or a permanent staff. You have remuneration package. You will have the confidentiality clause, transfer clause, as well as termination clauses. Now, these are basically the clauses that you find in an agreement. And as long as both parties agree to that, that becomes the contract of employment.
So essentially, this is what will determine the what you do, how much you're paid for, and the other conditions that you have to adhere to, whether you're an employer or an employee. Now, how does the Employment Act regulate the terms of employment then? How does it play a role in all of this?
Okay, basically, there's a threshold to qualify for the protection under the Employment Act of 1955. You know, the Act provides that employees whose wages or salaries do not exceed 2,000 ringgit a month, they fall under the protection of the Employment Act 1955. But there are exceptions to this. The exceptions are basically irrespective of the wage you earn, as long as you are a manual labor or the work you are engaged is in manual labor, you know, in a situation where basically you are on the ground, you are, say, you are a supervisor who's earning about 4,000 or 5,000, but 60% or 70%, more than 50% of your work is, you know, on the ground rather than sitting in the office. you're on the field, then you qualify under this act for the protection under this act. You are considered an employee under the Employment Act. You also have where an employee's job is basically to operate or maintain mechanically propelled vehicles to operate for or operated for, say, transportation of passengers or goods. They too, as long as their salary, cap is not confined to the 2,000 ringgit, they could even be earning 5,000-6,000 ringgit, but they fall within the definition of an employee under the Employment Act. Then you also have supervisors who oversee manual workers. They too fall within the definition. And workers in a vessel, irrespective of their salary, they too are considered employees under the Act. And finally, domestic servants.
So anyone who you've not just mentioned and earns above 2,000 ringgit, their entire employment is predicated on the contract that they've signed with the employer?
That is right. That is right. They don't fall within the definition of an employee under the Act.
So one of the concerns that's come about during the MCO, and as everyone deals with the impacts of the pandemic, has been salary cuts. And there have been stories coming out of employees getting their salaries cut here. So first question here, Mohan, can an employer unilaterally cut salaries?
Okay, we must understand an employer and an employee are bound by the terms of the contract of employment. Now, reduction of salaries of the employees is only possible, right, with the consent of the employee itself, right? That consent, you know, must be in writing where both parties agree to that variation of that particular term of the contract, that is the reduction of the salary. And you need to have it in writing, I say, because that way both parties are protected. And employers who unilaterally reduce salaries of his employees could face legal consequences, right? The employee, if he is unhappy with the salary reduction, he could put his employer on notice for breach of the term of his contract of employment. And if the employer does not reinstate the salary, the employee could consider himself constructively dismissed by his employer. So it is actually important for employers to get the express consent of his employee before such salaries are reduced. Now, just a sidetrack. I mentioned constructive dismissal, I mean, where the employee will consider himself constructively dismissed. Now, constructive dismissal happens in situations where an employee is forced to leave his job because of his employer's conduct, which the employee deems a breach of a significant term of his contract of employment. And that includes, of course, non-payment or unilateral reduction of the salary, harassment by the employer, demotion without justification, unreasonable transfers, etc. So, yes, unilateral reduction of salary is not allowed, and employers could get into trouble.
All right, Mohan, thanks for clarifying what constructive dismissal was. Well, we'll get into dismissals a little more later. So right now, basically, sure. Anything that doesn't, that any changes to the contract that you've signed with your employer, you must come to an agreement before anything can be changed, which includes your remuneration, but also things like your job scope and title as well.
Yes, that's right. Because that's a variation of the contract of employment. I mean, the terms are varied. Initial terms were agreed. So if there's going to be a variation, then both parties must agree to the variation.
So hence, if there's any changes to that, it could amount to a breach and then hence voiding the contract. That's why leading to that constructive dismissal.
Yes, that's right.
So now, Mohan, we're touching on disagreements with employers and employees, right? What options, what happens if there is a disagreement? So you've touched on constructive dismissal there. What else happens if there's a disagreement between an employee and an employer?
Okay, basically, there could be many disagreements between employers and employees. But as long as any of those disagreements touches on the terms or the nature of the job the employee is doing, then employees who are covered under the Employment Act 1955, they could go and lodge a complaint with the Jabatan Tenaga Kerja or the Labor Department. The Labor Department will then haul up the employer, try to get the matter settled between parties, failing which, of course, the matter will be pushed for a hearing. Now, complaint of non-payment of overtime or other breaches of the provisions under the Employment Act 1955, again, employees could go to the Labor Department and lodge a complaint, and the same thing happens. Now, as far as termination of contract of employment are concerned, that's also governed by the Employment Act 1955. For those who are covered under the Act, they could lodge a complaint with the Labor Department, or they could file a representation to the Industrial Relations Department. Now, just to touch very briefly, Labor Department, you are only entitled to termination benefits. And termination benefits are basically where, you know, employees who are working in the company for less than 2 years, you get 10 days salary for every completed year of service. Whereas, you know, if you had worked between 2 and 5 years, you get 15 days salary for every completed year of service. If you have worked more than 5 years, you get 20 days. So that, of course, the compensation that you get there, the termination benefits, is very inferior. And that's inferior compared to what you get at the industrial court. Because when you refer representation to the Industrial Relations Department, if the matter is not settled, it goes to the industrial court. And you can an employee who successfully defends or argues his case, he gets a maximum of 24 months of back wages. Plus, he's also entitled to compensation in view of reinstatement. And that compensation is 1 month's salary for every completed year of service. So if you actually see, he gets a maximum of 24 months back wages. And with the compensation, the benefits are greater at the industrial court.
So, Mohan, just clearing that up a little bit, these are only individuals who are covered by the Employment Act?
Individuals are covered by the Employment Act. They'll file a complaint to the Labor Department. Anyone who's not covered, they will basically, if they are dismissed from their employment, they will go to the Industrial Relations Department. You must understand, employees who are not covered under the Employment Act, but you know, they have issues, they've got complaints about the way their employers behave, you can only go to the Labor Court or Labor Department for advice, and you can't file a complaint there. You have to take this on your own, and if you're unhappy, you could consider yourself constructively dismissed or find a way out of the company if the company is not willing to listen to your complaints, and take it at the industrial court and say that you are unlawfully dismissed. There's a breach of contract by the employer, and you consider this, you consider yourself constructively dismissed.
So when it comes to taking it to court, my understanding is that it is the employee who then bears the cost here. And that can sometimes be a bit of a burden for some employees. Is there anyone, any groups or anyone in particular that can help out in this area if the Labor Department can't help outside of advice?
Okay. See, the thing is, they could actually go to the union, any of the unions, or MTUC, Malaysian Trades Union Congress, go to them for assistance. Okay, their charges are not very high. You could go to them and they will be able to assist you. Or, of course, you could also go to lawyers. Lawyers, when employees approach lawyers, when workmen approach lawyers, lawyers do not charge very high, actually. They are quite reasonable in their charges. So you could either go to lawyers or you could go to the MTUC for assistance. And that's the cost. And even if they don't succeed in their representation or complaint, they are not bound to bear the cost of the employer.
All right. I'm speaking to Mohan Ramakrishnan, Labor and Industrial Relations Lawyer. Up next, we're going to be talking about terminations and dismissals. You're listening to Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. Stay tuned.
Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Roshan Kanasan, and today I'm speaking to Mohan Ramakrishnan, Labor and Industrial Relations Lawyer, and we're breaking down the basics of employment. And right now we're getting into terminations and dismissals. Now, Mohan, What constitutes grounds for dismissal? Is it entirely based in the contract, or are there other clauses that are outside of the signed contract?
Okay, Roshan, there are a few grounds for dismissal that's recognized by law. One is the one that is very common is misconduct, where an employee misconducts himself and employers have the right to take the necessary disciplinary action against the person. So misconduct is one. There's also poor performance on the part of the employee, and there's retrenchment as well. So these are the main three grounds for termination in the country that's recognized in Malaysia.
And what is the process like when it comes to dismissal? Is there a standard process?
Okay, sure. Okay, as far as dismissals are concerned, when it comes to, say, I'll start with poor performance. Basically, employers who find their employees not performing, you do not immediately terminate their contract of employment. What you're supposed to do is you're supposed to give them guidance, you're supposed to counsel them if possible. If you have a performance improvement plan in the company, then you should let them run through the performance improvement plan, see whether they could actually cope, they could manage and better their performance. All right. If despite all this assistance that is given, the employee is still not able to perform, then they have a right to terminate their contract of employment. Now, as far as misconduct is concerned, if an employee is found to have misconducted himself, then it is important for the company to send him a show cause letter, and that show cause letter must specifically state what the allegations are against him. And that employee is obliged to reply to each of the allegations stated therein. Now, once the reply from the employee reaches the employer, the employer will have a look at it. He will see whether he's satisfied with the explanation. If he is, then fine. The employer will inform the employee that, you know, they are happy with this, you know, whatever his reply is. But if the company is not happy with the reply, then they will hold a domestic inquiry, you know, and if they're holding a domestic inquiry, then the strict procedures of the domestic inquiry must be complied with. A domestic inquiry is basically held to allow the employee to present his case and his evidence to support what his contentions are. Once the domestic inquiry is over, the panel will then make a decision and they will send that decision to the management for their consideration. The management will then, based on the decision, decide whether to absolve the worker of the allegations or find him guilty and mete out whatever punishment. And punishment can go right from dismissal. It could be a demotion. It could be withholding of salary, withholding of bonus, but we must remember that there can only be one punishment. You cannot have multiple punishment being given to an employee.
So now let's talk about retrenchment then. I think this is what's on a lot of people's minds at this point, especially as a lot of businesses face cash flow problems. So when it comes to retrenchment, how does that work? And if an employee gets retrenched, are there any benefits that they're entitled to in the law?
Okay. You see, retrenchment is basically discharge of surplus labor by the employer for any reason other than as punishment. Now, as a precondition, if the company decides that they wish to retrench staff, they will have to notify the labor department of their intentions to undertake the retrenchment exercise 30 days before the exercise is concluded. So, which means what they will actually do is they will have to inform the labor department on why they are planning the exercise, which in most cases, when you retrench, it is because, you know, you are restructuring. The position may become redundant and the restructuring is necessary because company is not doing well or they are suffering a loss. So in which event, the company is bound to show their books to the labor department. Let's just bring this in parallel to what's happening now with the MCO. The company, if they have decided to retrench staff, all right, this is, during MCO, just after MCO, the company has to show that the retrenchment is justified. And they must also show that the grounds for retrenchment are true. That is, say, for instance, the company is not doing well. They've lost contracts because of this MCO, you know. And they must also show that there is no ulterior motive or bad faith to victimize the employees concerned. This is very important. And again, after MCO, once the MCO is lifted, there will be many companies who will probably be taking like this route, saying that, you know, the finances are bad, the companies got no choice, they'll have to retrench. In which event, they must show that there was genuine financial impact to the company. You must show that you have actually suffered losses and there is no possibility of gaining financially in the next, in the near future. So you will not have a choice but to retrench.
So are there any benefits that employees are entitled to if they get retrenched?
Okay, what happens is this. See, when employees are retrenched, right, and if the employee is governed, his employment is governed by the Employment Act of 1955, then they are covered under the Employment Termination and Layoff Benefits Regulations of 1918. Now, this regulation clearly provides that employees are entitled to termination benefits, all right, under if they are retrenched. And of course, as I told you earlier, Regulation 6 clearly provides the termination benefits that you will get. If you have worked less than 2 years, you get 10 days wages for every completed year of service. If you have worked between 2 years and 5 years, you get 15 days. If more than 5 years, you get 20 days wages for every completed year of service. So they could actually lodge a complaint with the Jabatan Tenaga Kerja, the labor office, or they could go to the industrial relations department, because if you're retrenched or you're laid off, then that's considered ahead of dismissal, right? So you go to these, you go to either Jabatan Tenaga Kerja or you go to the industrial relations department. Now, employees who do not fall within the threshold of the Employment Act, then basically their termination benefits will depend on the terms of the contract of employment, or if the company has got its own handbook, then, and if the handbook actually provides for the termination benefits, then that will apply. If there are no such terms, okay, there is no automatic entitlement to such benefits. Generally, though, employers do pay 1 month's salary for every completed year of service. Now, there is also, employers have also resorted to MSS, mutual separation schemes, as well as voluntary separation schemes. Now, this is basically where if an employer finds that, you know, a position is becoming redundant, or they find that they are not able to sustain employees in the company, they could actually suggest to the employee these separation schemes. All right? These are basically where certain terms will be laid out, including compensation package in the separation scheme. Both parties will then agree to whatever that is stated in there. If the employer wishes to negotiate, they could actually negotiate. And once the terms are agreed, both parties sign, you know, the mutual separation scheme, then it's considered settled. The matter cannot go to court. Even if the employee takes it to court, it's not going to succeed. So this is a better way in the sense that, you know, it promotes industrial harmony as well, because, you know, you don't have to take your employer to court. You don't need to fight it out in court, the hostilities, etc. You don't have to go through that. Parties agree to certain terms and they live on a good note with each other.
So Mohan, it sounds like an MSS or a VSS will cost the company money. And in the event that they can't afford that, it sounds like then it goes to retrenchment. Is that correct?
That's right. If, of course, you know, if the employer offers an MSS or VSS and the employee does not agree, then he'll have no choice but to retrench. But we must understand, retrenchment is always the last resort. You know, there are many avenues which the employer must exhaust first, such as, you know, reduction of working hours, reduction of freezing of hiring of new staffs, limiting overtime, reduction of wages, laying off foreign workers first before you lay off workers from Malaysia, the local workers. You've got to do all this first. If you still cannot sustain and you find that you're not able to sustain financially, then you actually will have to retrench your staff.
So, Mohan, with everything in mind and everything we've talked about so far, do you have any general tips for employees as we face this uncertain time?
Basically, employees will have to keep their eyes open. They need to know what's actually happening, not only in their company, but also in the industry. You've got to know what's happening in the country as well. Economy is no good. I mean, let's come back to MCO. It's been a month plus now, and we've already heard companies who are actually planning to shut down businesses that are planning to shut down because, we must understand many businesses out there, they work on very limited resources. Without having any income in this last 1 month, many companies will be shutting down. So it's important for employees, to keep their eyes open. When your employer asks you to come and sit down and talk, to find ways and means of, cutting down on the expenses of the employer, you have to sit down and listen to them and you have to be reasonable, all right? That's one. Number two is, they have to ask questions to their supervisors or management. If they know something is happening in the company, they find the management making decisions which does not justify their actions or where it's going to affect their employment, then you have to speak to your supervisors or the management and ask them what's happening, why are you doing this? The third is seek proper assistance and advice from lawyers or MTUC or any union members. This is very important because the law and its requirements have become very stringent. I mean, talking 10, 15, 20 years ago, the law on employment, the employment law wasn't very stringent, but now it's becoming very strict, especially in instances of forced resignation and constructive dismissal. You must understand, there are employers out there who can be quite ruthless. They could just sit you down in a room and tell you, look, we don't want you anymore. We can't afford you. Here's your resignation letter. We've typed it out for you. Can you sign it now? And they don't let you go without you signing that resignation letter. That's forced resignation. So you need to know what the law and the requirements of the law is, right, in this in situations like this. So you need to get proper advice and assistance. Don't just make up your mind, when your management calls you in and says, hey, we're not performing well, we may need to reduce your salary immediately. You say, I'm constructively dismissed and you walk out. That's not what the law is. So general tips, again, is keep your eyes open, know what's happening around, speak to your supervisors, get proper advice and assistance from the qualified people.
All right, Mohan, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Roshan. Thank you for having me.
I was speaking to Mohan Ramakrishnan, Labour and Industrial Relations Lawyer, and this was Ringing in Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Roshan Kanasan for BFM 89.9.
Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.